the real wealth builder is holding it so that it can accumulate. You know, in our area, real estate's accumulating at 8 to 10%, which is unbelievable. You're going to beat inflation there.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, we all know inflation is here. It's here to stay. The numbers have been coming in higher than the so-called experts were expected. The only thing this expert is stunned by is the fact that they admitted that inflation is coming in higher than expected. Well, we've got a really good guest on today, Andrew Winnett. Look, you've been around Hollywood, literature, finance. You produced movies like The Retirement Deception and The Baby Boomer Dilemma. So you're an expert on this. So inflation, first, where does inflation come from? I mean, I know it. Most of you out there know it, but it never hurts to refresh and get a different view on that. Andrew, thanks for coming on. And, oh, if you got a question for Andrew or myself, shoot me an email, kl@carrielutz.com. So Andrew, it's great to have you on. Where does inflation come from? You know, like if you listen to the politicians, they just can't figure it out. They have no idea. But you and I know differently, don't we?
We do, Carrie. It's great to be with you. So there's a lot of problems that we're experiencing in our economy right now. Inflation is clearly one of the biggest. You know, I don't want to kick a dead horse, but, you know, to oversimplify.
We elect dead horses in this country. We don't kick them.
That's right. That is true. Hopefully we don't do that again here in a couple months. But so when we print too much money, obviously it's going to have an inflationary effect. You know, if you look at our present debt, which is, you know, across $34 trillion, we're on a run rate of $10 trillion per year through 2030. I mean, we're talking colossal amounts of debt. Now, the inflation problem, you know, if you go back to Jerome Powell, which is kind of like the Wizard of Oz, he's the guy in the behind the scenes who's pushing all the levers, and he has a big part to play in this inflation issue. And, you know, the Federal Reserve, they really only have a couple tools in their tool belt. And oftentimes, it just takes us on this merry-go-round dealing with inflation and then combating inflation by raising interest rates, and the interest rates destroy the economy and we go into a recession, and then we lower interest rates, essentially quantitative easing, printing money, and the cycle starts over. And so we're in another cycle, but the problem is that this merry-go-round can only go around so many times before this debt is unsustainable. What I'm concerned about is not just inflation, but it's also how is the stock market going to perform in the long term? We are going to have inflation. In fact, if you were to look at back in the late 70s and 80s, you know, the Paul Volcker era, when we had double-digit inflation, you know, back then they were factoring in food and energy into that CPI number. And they're being honest about it, right? Last year, you know, for a long, long time, the definition of a recession was two quarters of negative GDP. Well, we had that last year. And then all of a sudden, they're like, no. We're going to change the definition. I know we had two quarters of negative GDP. We're going to change the definition. That's not what a recession is anymore. They're doing the same thing with inflation. Now they're extracting food and energy out of the CPI numbers, which is 40% of the entire metric. And so the numbers that we're getting are flawed. They're skewed. They're manipulated. You know, their goal is a 2% inflation rate. That's never going to happen. And even then, you know, we're having a hard time at the 3%, 3.1 to 3.2, the sticky inflation. I'm concerned that inflation is going to continue to go up. And as it goes up, what is the Fed going to have to do? They're going to have to keep rates higher. And something's going to break. Banks are not out of the woods yet. We're going to have a lot of problems moving forward. And I'll end it with one other thought. You know, right now, the stock market is at essentially all-time highs. I mean, it's been an unbelievable ride. But, you know, there's that old adage, and obviously we all listen to the same experts, but if you show me your demographics, I'll show you your future. You know, predicting the stock market on the short term is extremely difficult, right? It takes a really big brain to look at the trends and predict, you know, what the stock market is going to do on a day-to-day basis. Oftentimes when people do that, they end up becoming a chain-smoking, you know, day trader, and they're stressed out of their mind losing their hair. But predicting the stock market on the long term is actually very easy because it's all demographically driven, right? So right now, we have such a swelling elderly population, they call it the silver-haired tsunami, that around 2030, we are going to have so many people retired or retiring, we're not going to have enough workers or taxpayers to cover the rising costs of Social Security disability, Medicare, and Medicaid. And we're not the only country in this predicament.
The entire West. The entire Western world is in this predicament, right? I've seen the charts. They're scary.
They are terrifying. You're absolutely right, Carrie. You look at Germany. Germany's in just as bad a shape as we are. China, similar situation. Their one-child policy backfired big time. Then you look at Japan. Japan is the worst in the entire world for their demographic problem. And once the demographics get off kilter or out of whack, the stock market flatlines. If you look at Japan as an example, because of their demographic issue, their stock market, and I'm oversimplifying, but their stock market has been stagnant for three decades. You look at Europe, they're an older country, same thing. Their stock market has been relatively flatlined and stagnant for two decades. As we in America go into this new season with this demographic problem, the stock market is not going to perform like it has, like we've enjoyed. And when that happens, inflation is going to punch harder. It's going to hit us even worse because we don't have our accounts, right? Our stocks, bonds, mutual funds that are combating inflation. So we're facing some big problems. And then one little cherry on top, Stanford Research recently came out and said, well, by 2050, the average lifespan will be a century long with AI technology and with modern medicine. So people are going to be living longer. The stock market is not going to perform as well. Inflation is going to be a consistent problem because of our massive debt. I mean, it's kind of a recipe for disaster.
You're just a bundle of optimistic, cheery thoughts today, aren't you, Andrew? Yeah.
Well, we have solutions. Mm-hmm. We have solutions. And if you'd like, I'd be happy to kind of tell you.
Please. I'm always looking for solutions.
Okay, so I'll tell you a quick story. When I was dating my now wife, Jess, we were on our, I don't know, second or third date. We were getting to know each other. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to take her to a batting cage, right? Like, you know, to hit baseballs.
How romantic.
I know. I was trying to show off. I'm pretty athletic, but I never played baseball.
You're one of those.
You know, I thought, oh, I could do this. You know, I'm going to show her how manly I am. So we go to this batting cage. And again, we're getting to know each other. And I did not know this, but my, you know, now to be wife, she got a full ride scholarship for playing softball. And so she wiped the floor with me. She crushed it. Every ball she hit out of the park. And I can't hit a stinking baseball. It was so embarrassing. I had to surrender my man card. It was humiliating.
Hey, there's your right. You see, that's what happens when you're
love sick.
When you make assumptions about the fairer sex.
That's true. Yeah, I made a grave error there. But winning the game of retirement is a lot like winning the game of baseball, okay? The way you win the game of baseball, they call it small ball. And small ball is you hit singles and doubles and you never strike out. It's the fundamentals, right? Don't try to hit the home run. Hit singles and doubles and never strike out. Well, at our firm, my personal belief is how you win the game of baseball is how you win the game of retirement. If you can earn 5-7% net, okay, so net of fees, net of, you know, any loss, and you never strike out, you never go backwards, you're going to win the game of retirement. So you don't win baseball by strikeout, strikeout, home run. That's not how you win. It's singles and doubles and never striking out. I believe in retirement, as you get older, right, it's not so much about how much do you earn, it's how much do you not lose. You know, Ted Benda, the founder of the 401k, he's in my first movie. He talks about the danger zone, which is 5 years before retirement and 5 years after. And if you're in that danger zone and you lose 20%, he said this, I didn't say this, if you lose 20% in that danger zone, he said you would never recover it. Now, that's sobering because we have a bear market, or at least we should, one out of every 4 or 5 years, right? So that is a big problem. So if you can earn 5-7% and never go backwards, you're going to win the game of retirement, just like you'd win the game of baseball, singles and doubles, never strike out.
And every now and then you get a grand slam and you really clean up. So,
right.
But now you got to do a little bit better because of inflation, right?
That's right. Yep. And that is a big problem. And that's why for us at our firm, okay, this is pretty unconventional, but when we're looking forward the next 15 years, we're trying to factor in inflation. We're trying to factor in the risk of the stock market. Okay, the stock market not performing as well as it has. We're trying to factor in longevity risk because this is going to be a big issue. In fact, the National Bureau of Economic Research, this is in 2012, okay? Mm-hmm. In 2012, they came out with this report that 57% of single, divorced, and widowed individuals will run out of money before they run out of life. And 46% of married couples will run out of money before they run out of life. Now it's even worse. It's literally one out of two. It's a coin flip, right? Heads, you don't run out of money. Tails, you got to go back to work at Lowe's or Home Depot or Starbucks, you know, and have some weird boss with face tattoos and purple hair. It's brutal. I don't like those statistics, but the odds are stacked against us. And so you have to have a conservative approach when it comes to planning for your future. I'll give you another quick metaphor. Have you climbed Mount Everest, Carrie?
No, it's on my bucket list, but I'm 66. I think it's going to have to wait for the next life, Andrew.
Gotcha. Okay, I haven't either. One of these days, I'm going to get somebody who says yes. I didn't know this, but more people die going down Mount Everest than going up. Now, when I first heard that, I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense. But as I discovered more, you know, when you're going up the mountain, you know, you wake up early at base camp, you ate your Wheaties that morning, you've got your eye on the prize, you're excited. You get to the top of the mountain, you plant your flag, and this is where all the mistakes happen. You know, you stay up there too long, you take too many selfies, you get altitude sickness, and then you're disoriented, you're tired, you slip on a crevasse, and you end up passing away. And the fatality rate for climbing Mount Everest is about 4%, which is brutal. Well, saving for your future, we'll call it retirement, is a lot like climbing Mount Everest. When you're going up the mountain, okay, this is your accumulation years, your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, maybe even into your 60s, right? You're saving money, you're putting it in the stock market, you're kicking butt. And it doesn't matter if the stock market crashes. Why? Because you have time to recover and time to recuperate. You've got a paycheck coming in. You're good. But as you get towards the top of the summit, this is where the mistakes happen. And going down the mountain, this is your decumulation years where you're enjoying what you've saved. And Carrie, this is where all the mistakes happen. And I often tell people that the Sherpa, quote unquote, or the financial advisor, or the way of investing that got you up the mountain is rarely the right Sherpa or financial advisor or way of investing to get you safely down. Why? Going down the mountain takes a different skill set. You know, most people have financial advisors in those accumulation years, and they're good at growing your money. The wealth management guys, that's important. It's good, right? Maybe you're doing it on your own. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. But although it's good, it's often incomplete on the downhill side of the mountain because there's more pieces of the puzzle that you've got to consider. For example, you need to have long-term care planning. 7 out of 10 people will find themselves in a long-term care situation before they pass. What about estate planning? You know, you saved your whole life, you worked hard. How are you going to pass it on? Longevity risk. What if we have another lost decade like we did in the S&P, where if you parked 100,000 in 2000 in the S&P, you didn't see that same 100,000 until 2014. That's 14 years of lost time because we had two crises in there. The dot-com bubble, global financial crisis. So how are you going to factor in all the tax planning, right? You may see a couple million bucks in your IRA, but the IRA is an IOU to the IRS. You don't get to keep all that money. So having a strategy, then we go to the lovely inflation. How are you going to keep up, right? What about required minimum distributions at 73? Right? In 2033, it'll jump up to 75. So if there's inflation that you're dealing with and the market happens to be down, and then the IRS, Uncle Sam says, Carrie, it's time to take out 200 grand and pay taxes on it. If the market's down, you realize the loss. So there's more to the puzzle than just growing your money. And that's where we want to help our clients.
Okay. So how do we do this here? How do we get this done? Push these goals?
Yes. It's a great question. So I discovered a strategy. This may blow you away by reading a story in the book of Genesis. It's actually the story of Joseph in the Bible. Many people are probably familiar, whether they believe in God or not. It's a fascinating story. And there's five principles in that story of Joseph that we based our entire firm on. And, you know, there's that old saying, if it's new, it's not true. If it's true, it's not new. This is 3,500-year-old wisdom that stood the test of time. But one of the strategies in there, we call it the silo strategy, okay? Imagine, if you would, that you're looking at four silos right next to each other. The first one on the very left is safety or emergency fund, okay? The second one from the left, so the one immediately to the right, is income. The third one to the right is growth, and the fourth one is long-term care / estate planning, okay? We'll go back to the first one, and it's in order of importance from left to right. So safety is the most important, then income, then growth, then long-term care / estate planning. With safety, on a typical portfolio, you want to have 5 to 10% of your overall portfolio invested in something liquid. Safety, you know, checking, savings, money market. So to use round numbers, to use easy math, if you got $1 million, you want to have at least 50 to 100 grand in a checking or savings account that you can get access to in a pinch, right? If Fluffy gets sick, it's a big vet bill, the heating and air unit goes out, the transmission explodes, whatever. You need access to cash. But once that 5 to 10% is good, then we go to income. Now, again, you may be retired for 30 to 40 years. Maybe not us guys, we die early, but our spouses, right? Mm-hmm. They may be retired for 30 to 40 years. They need an income that they can count on. So 50 to 70% of that overall portfolio is going to be earmarked for income. Now, this could be Social Security. This could be, might as well call it social insecurity. I may talk about that later. But real estate income, pensions, you know, annuities, whatever the case may be, is providing you an income you can count on, 50 to 70%. Once that is satisfied and you can count on it covering your bills, your fund money, and any sort of gifts or donations, benevolence, whatever, then you go to growth. Now, this is going to vary depending upon the person and their risk tolerance. This can be 10 to 20%, okay? Now, this one, you can be a little bit more risky with it. Because if the market crashes, it's all good. You've got a steady income coming in that you can count on, right? And then finally, long-term care slash death benefit. This one varies the most depending upon your goals, dreams, desires, concerns, and objectives. This is 0 to 20%. So safety, income, growth, and estate planning. When it comes to income, we want to make sure that your income is going to increase to help offset inflation. We want to make sure it's in the safest institutions in our country. We want to make sure it's got a proven track record and it's been around since the dinosaurs. And we want to make sure that no matter what happens in our economy, barring Armageddon, that it is predictable, it's reliable, and you can count on it. Once that's achieved, then the growth, you can be more risky. You can put it in the S&P. You can put it in Bitcoin. You can put it in high-risk investments. It's okay if you see some fluctuation there because you're not going to be living under a bridge because that income's covering everything. And then finally, if you have more disposable income, that's long-term care slash estate planning. Obviously, there's many strategies that you can utilize. But when it comes to retirement, which is who we usually deal with, that is the silo strategy that we base everything upon. And it is bulletproof. We provide a written down income plan. We factor in a 1/3 reduction in Social Security. So Olivia Mitchell, who's the foremost expert of Social Security in our country and really in the world, other countries have their own version of Social Security. They don't call it that, of course. But all the Nobel-winning economists point to Olivia as the expert of experts on that program.
What's her name again?
Olivia Mitchell.
Okay.
And she's in my first movie, The Baby Boomer Dilemma. But Olivia Mitchell talks about how because of the mismanagement and bad stewardship of Social Security, which, guys, it is a full-blown, by definition, Ponzi scheme.
You know,
Bernie Madoff does it at a high level and he goes to prison. When you do it at a gigantic level, you get reelected. It's ridiculous. So Social Security, because of, again, our demographic issue, we're going to see a 1/3 reduction in 2040. Well, then it got bumped up to 2035. Now, when we filmed the movie a couple of years ago, it's 2034. And today it's 2033. Barring massive reform, we are going to see a 1/3 reduction in Social Security. How is that going to affect everybody here? Social Security is a big piece of the puzzle when it comes to retirement. So one of the things that we do is we're going to create a Social Security stopgap fund. And what it does is it's a bucket of money that you put aside and it grows, it bakes in the oven at a very nice rate, typically around 8%. And then if and when that happens, you can turn this sucker on and you will not experience any reduction in standard of living.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in many situations, you'll actually make more. So again, not to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, Debbie Downer, but Social Security is going, it's headed for a cliff, Carrie. And you know, we hope for the best, but we prepare for the worst. You know, there's that old proverb, a prudent man foresees calamity and prepares himself for it, but the simple move forward and get punished. And so we want to make sure that everybody's in the know, that they're aware so that they can prepare.
Hey, I got a question for you. So, you know, based upon what you're saying here with the Social Security, you know, a cut, and I don't know if they cut it through inflation or they actually cut benefits. I just can't see them doing that, but I guess if you don't have a choice, you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Do you take the maximum you can get now?
Yeah.
Do you wait till you're 70 in a few years so you get 30% more?
It's a great question. I'll give you two answers. To address the first portion of the question, there's really only three. Well, there's four. There's four ways they can solve this problem with Social Security. Number one, raise taxes. That's highly unpopular. It's a political hot potato. And so nobody, you know, they kick the can on this thing, right? No one, that's not a way to get reelected. So you can raise taxes. Number two, you can extend the full retirement age, which, by the way, we saw what happened when they did that in France. They about burned the country to the ground, right?
Right.
So that's not popular.
Well, they've already done it, though. It used to be 65, Now it's 66 in 6 months, and it goes up a couple months every year, right?
Yeah, and it's actually 67. So depending upon your age, you may be, 66 in 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, but the full retirement age moving forward is 67. Well, they may have to bump it out 2 years to solve this problem. But that's 2 years, and most people at 67 don't want to wait till 69. So they can extend full retirement age, they can raise taxes, or they can lower cost of living adjustments, which they've done that as well.
They've done that for years already. It's, their definition of inflation, forget it.
Yeah. So it's non-key. And then it's in arrears, right? So we saw this with COVID when we had 9% inflation at the peak, and they didn't adjust the cost of living adjustments for almost an entire year. So for a year, all of the Social Security benefits were being devalued because of a 9% quote unquote inflationary rate. And it wasn't until the following year that they finally got that cost of living adjustment. So again, for that year, you kind of got screwed. Again, the fourth reason before I go off on a tangent and my frustration with Social Security, the fourth way you could solve it, and it's actually a pretty good idea, and Donald Trump, love him or hate him, he did come up with this, is you could start being a net exporter of oil. We have so much natural resource in America that we could actually solve that problem with Social Security and fund it by exporting oil. Drill, drill, drill. Now, again, that's unpopular with a lot of folks. And, who knows if that will ever happen, but it could solve that problem. Again, there's a lot of obstacles in the way. Now, that was my first answer. As far as practically, when should you claim Social Security? Here's a really good litmus test, okay? If you are the quote-unquote primary breadwinner, which means you make more to Social Security, maybe your spouse works, but you end up making more over your guys' career, then it is more beneficial for you to wait until at least full retirement age to claim Social Security. Now, your spouse, she can turn on her Social Security. And again, you need an expert. We can help you with that. But your spouse could turn it on at 62. And then depending upon how big hers is, she could actually get the spousal benefit, which is half of yours, at 67. And there's some strategies there. But here's the math, okay? As long as you are going to live past age 79, it is more beneficial for you to wait until full retirement age. Now, the mortality rate today in America for males is 84, and for females is 87. So as long as you don't have a chronic illness or everybody in your family died in their 60s, it is better for you to wait until full retirement age if you're the primary breadwinner. You end up, that's the break-even point. You end up making a lot more, not just for you, but for your spouse, if you wait until full retirement age as the primary breadwinner. Now, maybe you're a single individual, and so you would be the primary breadwinner, of course. You do want to wait until at least 67. You don't have to wait till 70. You end up getting, 8% more per year from 67 to 70, but you're just getting paid on the back end. It's no more of a big, benefit. 67 is the number.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, well, so 67 or 66 and whatever months, but call it 67. So, yeah. But if there's really a 40% cut coming, it's yes. a 40, right?
33, yeah.
And in 2030, that's only 6 years away now. And
33.
Right?
So it's 2033, and it's a great point, Kerry. The sentiment is, well, maybe I should turn it on at 62. I paid into this for super long. Let's get it while the getting's good, But the thing is even if we have a one-third reduction, which we're planning on it happening, most advisors, in fact, I've never met another advisor that actually does.
I've talked to dozens on this show. Hundreds maybe over the years, no one ever said they're going to cut.
Yes. Well, that's one of the reasons we're different is we're factoring in the worst case scenario. So, and we prepare for it. So if it doesn't happen, it's rivers of gravy in retirement. But having said that, the sentiment can be, well, I'm going to turn this on. It's going to get cut by a third. Yeah. I want to have the benefit now. But if you do the math, one third of a watermelon, you know, a one third reduction of a watermelon is still better than a one third reduction of a grape.
Right. Right.
You still will end up making more if you defer until 67 or full retirement age, whenever it may be for you.
Right.
So I still
you should always defer. That, yeah. That's a given. You should always defer. But the real question is, do you take it 67 or do you take it at 70 and get the 30% benefit? And if we assume that you are correct, all right, and we have no reason not to because it's obvious to many of you out there that this is in fact coming here, right? If we are in fact 10 years going to take a one-third hit, the question is, and you're going to be, assuming you're going to live longer than 10 years, you could get your full retirement now or wait 3 years. What's worth it? That's the question.
Well, and this is where the stakes are not so high. As long as you made it to full retirement age, it's preference, right? So if you're still working, as an example, and you've got a bunch of money coming in and you don't want to get taxed on the Social Security, because by the way, you can get taxed on your Social Security income up to 85% of whatever Social Security pays you. So you get double taxed. It's a joke. It's ridiculous. So if you want to defer that, if you're making six figures, multiple six figures, you know, your spouse is, you know, still working, maybe you don't need it. Yeah, defer it. That's fine. But it's not going to make or break the overall equation. You made it till full retirement age. Do you want to turn it on? Would you benefit from it? Would it provide more peace of mind? Great. You know, you have the green light for me because at least you made it to full retirement age. Beyond that, that's more preference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we covered a lot of material here. Andrew, really appreciate your insights.
And
why don't you tell us where we find you, how we connect with you on the web?
Yeah. So I actually have an offer for every listener. If you go to nomorelosingmoney.com, nomorelosingmoney.com, you can get access to 3 out of 4 of my books. And then you also have access to one of my movies, The Retirement Deception, which is a wonderful film. It goes over the story of my mom and many others across the country who have obtained the retirement of their dreams. There's no actors. There's no lines we fed anybody. It's just good people like you and me who are living the dream and what they did to obtain that retirement. So nomorelosingmoney.com, or you can check on my website at retirementrenegade.com.
Retirementrenegade.com. All right. Hey, Andrew, one other thing. Real estate.
Yes.
Housing prices. Generally, yeah. When we're talking retirement, that is going to be people's largest asset, generally.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've had a mortgage for a while, you paid it down, or you bought it for cash when it was really cheap. And now with the latest housing price inflation, presumably the value of your home's really gone up.
Yes. So
what do you do with that? When do you like get rid of the house
and
downsize? And is it worth it if you got to get a mortgage anyway now?
Well, so I'll tell you this. I am a gigantic fan of real estate. I'm buying as much as I possibly can. We bought about $5.5 million in real estate last year. We'll buy 20 more rentals this year. Huge fan because it's a tangible asset that typically keeps up with inflation. Now, where I'm at in the Nashville area, this is a booming area, And so that demand is driving prices up. As far as when you're retired and let's say you're sitting on a ton of equity, you know, that's a complicated conversation. You know, most people in my area, the average house is $1 to $1.5 million. And so most people have it completely paid off. So it's like, well, you could downsize, but where are you going to go? Right. I mean, we live in such an amazing area. Maybe you drive an hour into town and you buy a house for 400 grand and you pocket the million. You could do that, but wealth is really built on holding. It's long-term holding. You know, even rentals which most retirees, you know, have dabbled with at some point in their life, you don't make money on the cash flow typically. That just allows you to hold on to it for longer. The money,
get someone else to pay the debt if there is any debt, right?
That's right. But the real wealth builder is holding it so that it can accumulate. You know, in our area, real estate's accumulating at 8 to 10%, which is unbelievable. You're going to beat inflation there. So, but
if it continues, if it keeps up, that's the big if, right?
If, yes. But I'm a huge fan of real estate.
Okay. Hey, we'll leave it at that. KHKL@KarryLutz.com. If you have any questions, link to Andrew's sites in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Please sign up for your free newsletter. Andrew, really a pleasure. We're going to have you back. You're on our list as a retirement expert extraordinaire. And we'll talk to you again real soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.